There we go. Well, as Leghorn, Foghorn Glenhorn said on the Dune cards, it's too good to be true, but here I am.
You're back. Well, you know, I had to carry the can here for 2 weeks with very
Must have been
important.
an onerous burden.
It was an onerous burden. It was, but no lack of stuff going on in the world in our border pull community, you might say.
No, I guess this horrendous Texas incident is making news as it should, and I don't know really what the answer is going to be. As long as we've got people who are willing to pay thousands of dollars to get someplace, it's unfortunate, but people are going to die. I don't know what the answer is going to be. We certainly can't seem to catch these people and put them away, but
Well, the latest that I have here on the screen is that two Mexicans were charged with the trafficking. There's more information now coming that there were 39 men, 12 women, most of them citizens of Mexico. And this thing took place already 160 miles, 250 clicks north of the border. So these folks were in there some time under horrendous conditions.
And as I said, I don't know how you're going to stop it. Why don't we go back to programs? When I, this is way back just after the last dinosaur died, I think, but we had issues where when I worked at the airport, we had an agreement with Japan Airlines where they would fly itinerant workers in, and the Mexico consulate came out and they were all pre-approved. They got work permits, they went and did their things. 6 months later, JAL had the same plane go back with these people, and everybody seemed to be happy. We never had any refugee claimants from them. They were happy to get the work. They were probably just as happy to go back home and have that cash in their pocket. It doesn't seem to me to be too far a cry to say, why don't we go back to that kind of stuff instead of having pay thousands of dollars to some guy you really don't know who's going to lock you in a truck and you're probably going to die.
Well, you know, there's a kind of the binary argument about border management. You don't have a problem if you have no border enforcement because there's nothing to enforce. In other words, if you leave the door open to anybody and everyone who wants to enter, then the issue of border security and border management is moot because there isn't any. That's one end of the spectrum, and the other end is essentially you build a wall and barbed wire, and nobody can come in. Of course, that's as idiotic as having nothing there. But in the it seems we collectively in the Western world on the issue of refugees and even just the regular economics driven migration, I can't seem to find middle ground. Or common sense on this. There seems to be agreement that humans will always be on the move since we went vertical, you know. So that's agreed to, and by and large, immigration is good for everybody if it's properly managed. People who want to start a new life in a for whatever reason in another country or another region of the world, without being driven by famine or war or what have you, that's a management. I don't we there was somehow that concept has eluded lawmakers who seem to be focusing on the next election as opposed to managing a constant moving policy. Obviously, if you're coming from a depressed part of the world, you're going to gravitate to a less depressed part of the world, and using the depressed, it could be anything, economic, social, environmental, who cares? When that changes, the shift goes the other way. As far as the refugee movement, that is in in my opinion, been totally destroyed as a bona fide sort of legal concept, yeah. because they've adulterated the concept of refugee to fit any and every possible circumstance. Yeah. So therefore, it also has become a political tool of rather despicable political entities who use people as a vote getter. And it doesn't matter what side of the fence that vote is on, as long as they get it. So the guys on the right, you know, with their harebrained schemes, along with the guys on the left, their harebrained schemes, and nobody wins. And the people who get the worst out of this entire melange of non-policies are the migrants themselves, who then are foisted into a community that doesn't want them. So, you know, it's just, you know, and I think we went off the rails, you know, like about 20 years ago, when you look at sort of what is it, how did we get to this point, not just in North America, but Europe and other parts of the world?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. We in Canada seem to have this thing that, and dare I say it, you know, if you've been deported from Canada, it's not going to look well on your resume, because Canada accepts just about everybody. And when they don't get accepted, the first thing they do is jump into a church and want a sanctuary. The reason I bring that point up is several years ago, we were traveling through Britain, and one of the, I forget which abbey it was or which place we were at, but outside the halls in the church, they had quite big signage there talking about sanctuary and how it was a legitimate defense for somebody who was persecuted to seek refuge in the church. But the time limit was 37 days. At the end of 37 days, if you didn't get your stuff all cleaned, that was your problem. The state could come in and do whatever they will. I don't know if that would work in today's society or not, but you know, things are, as you said, they're messed up, and it goes back 20, 30 years.
Well, and it also exploits sort of the weaknesses in communities that are really not prepared for having that many newcomers enter into their school system, their health system, looking for jobs, the whole shebang, and that there's a resentment that builds up. And this is an unnecessary provocation, in my view, of you know, because immigration in general is a good thing. I don't understand how you can take a good thing and screw it up so badly. But it seems to me that in the last 20 or so years, the folks who are in charge of this have done a great job of doing just that.
Well, yeah, and again, it goes back to, I think, what you were saying before. It's a political thing. Rather than bringing in skilled immigrants, i.e. bricklayers, you know, whatever you want, we're focusing on family unification, which it's kind of like a mom and apple pie statement. Yeah, it's really nice, but what are mom and grandparents actually bringing to the country? Not yes. a lot. You know, maybe yeah. they're helping out the families by looking after the kids while they work, but, you know, the buy a visa program, right? You know, that became just a cash cow, really. And, you know, why don't you just say, send us $1 million and we'll mail you your passport in 5 years, you know? Yeah. Right?
Well, you know, we spoke about that a couple of episodes ago about how that was exploited and still is, simply to make money for some of the smaller countries that do this. But it's still an exploitative thing, and I'm not sure it contributes anything to the community where the folks are headed for.
No.
The other thing, this particular case of this tragedy in Texas, you know, it also puts into question relationships between the two countries, Mexico and the United States. The Mexican president said that in a report I have in front of me here, that he's warned that the U.S. government is struggling to manage its southern border and blaming a lack of control, in quotes, since the death of the over 50 immigrants. On Tuesday, he had a press conference. This is President Obrador of Mexico. He said that it's a tremendous tragedy that these incidents occur due to poverty and desperation, as well as a chaotic environment along the border.
Yeah.
And quotes, he says, it happens because there is trafficking of people and a lack of control, which basically is a shot at the Americans in the case of the Mexican-U.S. border, but also in the U.S. interior. Mm-hmm. Now, the Americans have now had well over a million people enter undocumented, illegally, whatever euphemism is being used by the politicos any given day. And no one knows where they're going, what they're doing. It's totally chaotic. And yeah. and to an outsider, you'd say, okay, so what is the end game here? What is it you're trying to achieve by flooding the zone, so to use a football term, with millions of people who are clearly on the ascendancy economically and socially. So how are you going to deal with that? And there's no discussion. It just seems to be, you know, if you question or you want to know the answer to it, you're somehow demonized by the folks who think this is a good idea. And okay, well, explain to me what the end game is, because that's what, you know, I think is important to come to grips with.
Well, it is, and you wonder if that million people, undocumented, illegal, again, whatever euphemism you want, how many of those are actually heading to the northern borders and hitting our southern borders?
Well, there's a place for them, Roxton Road.
Well, just not there. I mean, you take a look anywhere along that massive undefended, or not undefended, what's the word?
It is undefended. There's no, you know, there's what's between the ports of entry. Nothing, particularly from the lakehead to your neck of the woods. There's, yeah. You know, it's a line drawn on a map.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but you remember what happened last winter? Those East Indians froze to death trying to get into Manitoba because someone said all you have to do is walk north because there's nobody there.
Yeah, we've also had them coming north where they've lost body parts because of frostbite.
You know? Yes. So I mean, I'm sorry, but it's the responsibility is shared with the person who took the chance, with the people who allowed them to take the chance. You know, it's there's lots of blame to go around here. You can't just blame people who basically were sold on, hey, if you could just go north, you'll be okay. Yeah, you'll be okay if you don't freeze to death in the winter.
Yeah.
And no, it's really quite, you know, like you say, how does it get stopped?
Well, I think you were mentioning the other day too, going back to one of your previous statements about whether we should even bother having a border. And kind of the concept of the EU, right? I mean, you could get into the EU and you travel all over the place. But you mentioned the other day that, was it Hungary now wants to put their border service back together?
Yeah, they want to create a new board. This was 2 days ago, was in the Hungarian parliament. You know, the Hungary is in a unique geopolitical position, I guess, geographic and political, meaning that geographically they have a big migrant push from their southern border through Serbia, Romania, and through the Balkans, and they're basically the line of defense to the EU. And then you have, of course, the Ukraine-Russia war. So there's all those people coming. And the police, your garden variety police department, has been essentially called into service as border guards, and they simply don't have the training or the capacity or the or the interest in doing this long term. Now, the Hungarians had a border guard service that basically was disbanded just over 10 years ago for, I guess, both economic reasons, because it was an expensive business to run. Mm-hmm. And there was this utopian view that now that they were in the EU, you didn't need a border guard service. You had the external border, which is quite short between actually Ukraine and at that time Romania before it was also part mm-hmm. of the EU. And that could be handled by basically a small group, and the police would just be assigned to do it. So you took a 10,000 person organization and you disbanded it. Some of the personnel were attached to police service. So we're not talking about, you know, everyone was unemployed. They were just those that could retire did, and those that wanted to continue in law enforcement went to, you know, different parts of the country, you know, wherever they were. But as it turns out, like all these ideas that evolved since 9/11 about how border management, border security should be done, this has not worked out. And the situation that they see themselves in right now with pressure from the east with the war and in serious pressure from the south with illegal immigration, which has the same hallmarks of trafficking and what have you as the Americans are seeing at the Mexican border, because it's not just Mexicans coming into the United States, just like it's just not Serbians trying to get into Hungary. What you have is people from 100 different countries. Clearly the Middle East for the and the Balkan area is the big draw into mm-hmm. Europe, and these folks don't even want to go to Hungary. They want to go to Germany and France and what have you. Yeah. But they got hapless Hungarians are responsible for guarding the EU border. So and you know, maybe at a discussion another time is just how well have all these changes administratively and bureaucratically been positive for border security and border management in general. Yeah. You know, it's difficult to not be a little bit shy about talking about it. Well, because at the time there was folks like me who thought, well, maybe that's not a bad idea, just because you could, you know, economies of scale and mm-hmm. sharing equipment and technology and blah, blah, blah. You know, the people who were assigned to look after the protection of the country and the revenue and making sure drugs and goods didn't get in, and the other folks who are responsible for who comes in and the, you know, human beings, and the third bunch looked after the cattle, so to speak, and the agriculture. You know, the argument, as you know, was these things can all be rolled into one, and there were compelling arguments basically on the economic side that said you could have control, you know, central control, much like the military, where you have a central in the military you have the chiefs of staff, but you still have the groups underneath, mm-hmm. Navy, Army, Air Force. But that's not what they did with DHS in the States, or with the Border Force in the UK, or CBS Inc. And the list goes on and on of the copycatting that went on in the early part of the century to build these massive bureaucracies. And the truth is that they were supposed to save money, which they haven't. They were supposed to make it more effective, which they haven't. Supposed to make it more efficient, which they haven't.
Yeah.
So you go, well, it was a good idea, but it didn't work out.
Well, you know, being a former government person, and as you were as well, you know that it's a circular game. What was good in 1980 can be refloated again in 1990, and somebody might remember it, and most people are hoping they won't, and maybe they can let that go up the flagpole and see who stand and salute, right? I mean, I don't think there's anything really new under the sun as far as border management's concerned that probably hasn't been tried somewhere at some point. And I anyway, that's another, you're right, it's another topic.
Yeah, but I'm circling back to this tragedy in Texas, the fact that there's this massive agency called DHS and CBP, it hasn't done much to dent these events, and this is a classic example of, well, this hugely bloated organization, quite political as well now, it didn't save these 51 people.
No. Well, again, anecdotally, when I talked to a few U.S. Border Patrol guys who had come up off the southern border to the northern border, and they said it wasn't unusual in the course of a shift, a 4 p.m. to midnight, to apprehend 4,000 people. That's a lot of people in an 8-hour shift.
Yes.
And by their own admission, they figured that was maybe a tenth of what was actually coming across. And a lot of the times, by the end of the shift, by the time they had finished writing up all the paperwork on those 4,000 people, half of those people were already on the next ship, and they'd missed them already. So
These are
it's
the
not a new
gotaways.
situation. It's just there's a draw to come to the United States, to Canada, for whatever reason, whether this. See if the streets really are paved with gold. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it we certainly have lost sort of the focus on why we do what we do. On this matter, we have a new associate has joined Border Patrol, a fellow by the name of Larry Cameron, who's an expert on human trafficking, and we'll try to get him on sometime in a very near future to give us some of his expertise on this, because while, like you say, not much has changed, one of the things that I have a real question for him is, why don't we have more people who are involved that are incarcerated for running these criminal organizations and trafficking in human? I don't understand what the batting average, you might say, of the courts justice system on this is so poor. You rarely hear of cases that have gone in front of a court where some criminal organization has been brought down.
And that's true. And again, I don't know. I haven't looked at the immigration legislation here in Canada for quite a long time now. But we always had to put a number on it. It was trafficking if it was 10 or more people. Well, no, it's trafficking with one person. But we couldn't go to court unless there was 10 or more. Well, I really don't see what the difference is, right? If you're doing it with one, or you're doing it with 10, you're doing it with 100, what difference does it make? It's still that individual that fortunately we don't get them more than maybe one or two that die. But as you mentioned, that family last winter, but we don't get into the 50s and 40s of people that are dying coming north. But one person, why don't we prosecute on one person? Maybe that would send a stronger message.
Well, we're pretty keen on taking people to court on and looking at them vis-a-vis the proceeds of crime on much more I should say less heinous cases. But to me, this is such a I don't even know where to start. And like I say, the courts are not clogged up with cases of traffickers and their syndicates, the focus on other things much less dangerous to humanity as a whole seems to be the tension getter at the moment. But while we're talking about the North America, I think you saw in the government of Canada has announced that they're Their Arrive Can program is going to be extended till the end of September.
Yeah. Wow.
If you don't have a phone, you got a problem.
On a very general basis, I can understand why they would like, why they want the information ahead. It's maybe to streamline the process, but you know as well as I do, it's a data grab is all it is. We just came back from the United States, and you know it's onerous to fill out. You know, I could fill it out now, but I can only go a week ahead. But if I want to go away for 3 weeks, I have in the middle of my vacation, I got to worry about logging on to this application and filling out all that's required to come back. And for the life of me, I can understand why they want to know the day I'm coming back, but why do they want to know the time? Now, what difference does it make if I put that I'm arriving at 4:30 and I arrive at 3:30? Am I not going to be admitted? Or what happens if I come back an hour later and you know, instead of 4:30, it's 5:30? Am I going to be questioned? I just don't understand that at all. Well, and coupled with that, you're playing a bit of, dare I say it, Russian roulette that you may be sent for a random COVID test.
Well, the Arrive Can thing was invented because of COVID. COVID is, you know, it's in the rearview mirror now. Again, as I said earlier in the other issue, where's the end game in this?
Yeah.
Who's profiting? Sorry to be so crass, but someone's making a lot of money on this app.
Well, it's not just necessarily the app. I mean, that's the old adage that the police used decades ago. You want to know where things are going wrong, follow the money. You know, you're always find what's going on, who's profiting, I guess, is and
yeah, except this particular program has no mother or father. This is what I don't understand. Like if this, because it's a when you look at the technology behind it, it clearly leads back to the World Economic Forum that wants to have some kind of global migration system going. And this little adventure, I called it an adventure because nobody else is doing this. Okay, this Arrive Can thing, it really is an elitist program, because if you don't have a smartphone, what are you supposed to do? Are you now indentured to the telecoms because the government of Canada says if you travel, you better have a phone. Oh, which by the way, we can peruse anytime we want and find out things that are of no interest to the border service, but it might be of interest to somebody else, which you have no control over. I mean, this is Big Brother really starting to expand in areas where, you know, we don't have much jurisprudence on it, and we certainly don't have any data protection or privacy policies. I'm not the least bit encouraged by the words on the website that you have, don't worry, this is a blockchain and all this, you know, technical gobbledygook of how it's all protected. Don't worry, everything will be fine. Yeah, sure. And I've got some swampland for you in Florida that's really good.
Yeah, there might even be a bridge there too.
Yeah. So, you know, and then you look at, again, if I were to be given the information of what the end game for this is, are you going to give everybody a phone when they travel? I mean, what are you going to do? If you cross the border before you go to the duty-free shop and pick up a CBSA phone so that when you want to come back, you type in, I'll be back at 3:30, you know, or if you're overseas, who picks up the tab for making the call, you know, because you've got to have an internet connection. I mean, this is driving, first of all, it's a very elitist thing. It drives poor people or poorer people away from the ability to travel. I'm sorry, but that's what it comes down to. All you used to have was a passport. And that was your right to leave or enter. It says right there on the first cover of your passport. Okay, all you have to have is this, and you're entitled to come into Canada or whatever country you're a citizen of. That's what it. You don't need a phone.
Yeah.
Okay. For starters. Secondly, the business of keeps the records. This is just too off the wall for me to accept.
Yeah. But and again, I don't understand the concept of
Oh, and by the way, what happens to all those at Nexus card? Why do you need a Nexus card anymore then?
Well, again, I've got a story about that when we came back from Hawaii last year in the midst of the COVID stuff, where you had to pay, in our case, $189 US per person to get a COVID test to come back to Canada, primarily to satisfy the airlines that you actually were COVID free, because that's really all it was. You showed that to them and nobody else was interested in it. But coupled with that, we got to the airport, got checked in, handed our boarding passes, brought out our Nexus cards, went to the Nexus lines, went into the Nexus line, got as far as the security guard that was there, who looked at it and said, "You can't use this line." And I said, "Why?" "Well, the airlines didn't say that you were TSA approved on the boarding pass, so you can't come through here." So I said, "The card means nothing?" "No, well, the airlines didn't, and I don't care about what the airline said. Is this card valid or isn't it?" "No, you have to have a TSA check mark by the airlines on your boarding pass." So we were booted out of the line and had to go into the regular place. So yeah, what good is a border a Nexus card if you can't use it?
The other thing you'll be amused to learn, again, it was in the press this morning, that if you want to get a Nexus, if you're a Canadian, want to get a Nexus card, you'll have to book the appointment with U.S. Border Service, because Canadians don't have the capacity to do it anymore, or at least at the moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're probably all going to be pulled off to help issue passports, no doubt. But
yeah, well, that's also for another program. Moving across the Atlantic, this has been you've been away for 2 weeks, and there's all kinds of headlines that are really interesting, Bob. Let's say 65% of French people say there's too much immigration. Greece to triple the length of its border fence with Turkey because they're such pals, as you know. King of Norway praises diversity after Islamic terrorist group shoots up gay bar. Telling you. 100 migrant clan members brawl with knives and sticks in Germany, which is, you know, I guess we'll have to start putting out prohibitions on knives and sticks. We're taking away guns from people. So when these guys have fights with knives and sticks, we'll have to start registering knives and sticks. nearly 5,000 gang members in Sweden are either first or second generation migrants. Again, that's a statistic that, well, how is that possible? NGO activists pick up 500 migrants in Central Mediterranean. Europol identifies potential trafficking schemes preying on vulnerable Ukrainians. And that's we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, where they're already in tough shape, these poor Ukrainians who are refugees, and now you've got gangs preying on them who are traffickers themselves. And I think there's really no shame with these people. 23 migrants dead, 140 officers injured after 2,000 African nationals stormed the Spanish border at Muela, which is, you know, that Moroccan enclave. Right. So we could go through those, but that's kind of that gives you the flavor of how things are happening. There's caravans in southern Mexico that are coming to the border. But these caravans aren't Mexicans, and they're not Central Americans in particular. There are some, but there's a whole load of folks from over 100 countries in this caravan. There's a report by the Population Institute that Canada is facing an immigration-driven housing crisis, because as the doors are swung open for 500,000 people every year to enter Canada legally, this is because there are 400,000 to 500,000. There's no housing. Where are these folks going to live? But that's something that the government appears to leave to other jurisdictions. They're virtue signaling to the world that Canada is open to migration. But when you get here, tough luck if you're living out on the street. Sri Lanka, which is the canary in the coal mine for the world's economic and situation with energy, is in
dire straits.
Absolutely dire straits. And the part of the movement out of Sri Lanka, and I'll just is that the thousands are opting to hop in boats and leave Sri Lanka and to go I don't know where, because as you know, it's in the Indian Ocean there.
Yeah.
And it's a long way from anywhere.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. Just amazing. So while you were away, the world continued to evolve in a kind of negative way with regard to the border management, human mobility situation.
Yeah.
It's quite a churn on this at the moment.
Yeah, and I don't want to sound pessimistic, but it certainly doesn't look like it's getting any better.
No, and when I look at the headlines on other subjects, we seem to have the attention of the international community, but with much less sort of immediate impact. You kind of wonder when they talk about we'll have electric cars by 2030. I'm thinking, yeah, okay, but based on what? Or we're going to reduce poverty by spending more money from the central government. I'm going, how are you going to do that? I mean, who's going to make the wealth that's going to generate the money to give to everybody to live well? The inflation situation at the moment, the cost of living, the declining salaries, relatively speaking, of people who are still working, the tens of thousands of jobs that go empty. Which makes no sense. If the dichotomy there is, how can there be jobs wanting, but which we're supposedly bringing in people from around the world to fill, but nobody wants to fill them.
Yeah.
At the same time, you have an economy that is completely out of control of central banks. Politicians have stuck their heads in their backsides to some extent on this. I'm sorry to be so critical, but I don't see any leadership on this, you know, because I guess they're as befuddled as everybody else. But these are man-made crises, you know. These weren't foisted on us. Yes, COVID was here, but they seem to have only learned how to be authoritarian vis-a-vis COVID, but not action orientated as COVID's in the rearview mirror, we need to move forward. Why you keep the borders closed? Why you would make life even more challenging for people than it was? Yeah. It's a mystery. Again, it's part of this end game thing that I'm not sure of at the moment. Like, what is the end game in Europe with Ukraine or in with Russia? No one seems to talk about this except. No. They seem to think that everyone's happy to be facing a very uncertain future, and they don't have any real discussion of, okay, what do you do with the millions of people who are displaced? What do you do with the people who are victims? How are you going to rebuild Ukraine if that comes about? Russia will still be there. What are you going to do? Is NATO intending to, you know, go all the way to Moscow, or what? Yeah. What is the plan here? Yeah. It's very strategically opaque, and the other thing is there's a lot of questioning of the sincerity of the leadership on all sides of this.
Well, I think that's part of the problem. Maybe the end game. Government used to be respected. They're certainly not now. Maybe they're hoping that having all these crises that people will actually turn to them and look to them for salvation. I think it's gone way past that, and the cynicism for anybody in a political situation now is just right off the scale.
Yeah. Well, I guess they're waiting for some individual or individuals who have a positive view of things and see the glass half full with See, you just can't say hope and change. You have to have something that really gives people something to hope for and see results of the change. Right now, none of those really exist. Hate to use President Obama's slogans, but that's really what it is. Yeah, you can tell me about hope, but I'm not sure what you're wanting me to hope for. Yeah. And you're talking about change, and there's no evidence of any change that's positive. So we're going through, I think, a little bit of a depressing time in our history. Yeah.
I got the answer to that, Dom. If you don't see the glass as half empty and you don't see the glass as half full, be like me. Just grab it and drink it and the problem solved.
Well, on that positive note, I'll let you go. It's a weekend in Canada, in the U.S. It's first July 1st, yes. Canada Day, and July 4th in the U.S. So,
yes, all the best to the American that are watching. And I hope you have a wonderful holiday.
And the same to our Canadian
pals. I hope we do as well.
Yeah. Yep, indeed. Anyway, until next Friday, my friend.
Yes, indeed.
Take care, and we'll pick it up.
You bet.
And I got to hit the stop button here somewhere. You can see we're unrehearsed for those watching.
Totally live, as you see it.
As you see it.